Welcome to the deep dive. We dig into different sources to pull out the key insights for you. It saves you time. It gives you a deeper understanding.
Exactly. Get right to the heart of it.
So today we're diving into episode 67. This is based on Captain Richard E. Diller's firsthand account from a YouTube video about the rescue of Boxer 22. It's titled Episode 67, Captain Richard E. Diller and the Rescue of Boxer 22 A1 Sky Raider Heroics in Vietnam.
A really specific personal perspective on a single event. Very valuable.
Yeah, and we know you want that thorough knowledge, but quickly. So our goal here is to give you a really clear picture of what Captain Diller went through and, the wider context.
Should be fascinating. It's a compelling story.
All right, let's get started. So Captain Diller sets the scene. He was actually checking out a couple of other pilots in the A1 Sky Raider.
Oh, okay. So he was an instructor pilot.
Seems like it in this context, yeah. One was Captain George Luck, needed familiarization. The other was, get this, a former A26 squadron commander. Experienced guy, World War II, Korea.
Wow. Even with that background, needed a checkout in the Sky Raider. Tells you something about that aircraft.
Right. It highlights how specialized the A1 was and, the demands of flying it in Vietnam.
Absolutely. It wasn't just basic flying skills. It was about using that specific plane in that environment. Very challenging.
So Diller's actually flying with Captain Luck on the morning back tune. Boxer 22 gets shot down. It's about 8:00 a.m.
Okay.
Then they get this urgent call, land immediately. Their planes are needed to support a downed air crew, a bad area, they said. Both pilots from Boxer 22 ejected initially survived.
Right. A priority one situation, search and rescue.
Exactly. But Diller didn't actually fly the rescue mission that first day. He'd already been up instructing Luck, so someone else took the aircraft.
Makes sense. Crew rest, readiness, all those factors come into play.
Yeah.
But it shows how quickly things could escalate.
Totally. Constant alert. Now, day two, that's when Diller gets directly involved. He's assigned to fly with First Lieutenant Rex Huntsman. Their job is to look for the backseater, Woody Berger. The frontseater, Ben Danielson, tragically, he didn't make it. Killed during the ejection.
Ah, okay, so the mission focus shifts entirely to finding Berger.
Yeah.
A stark reminder of the risks.
Definitely. And Diller describes this really gut-wrenching moment. A rescue helicopter makes its approach low up the river, gets Woody Berger within 5 feet of the
Oh
hoist.
my gosh, so
And
close.
then the helicopter just pulls away abruptly. The pilot thought they were taking fire. Diller mentions, though, it might have been the tail rotor getting tangled in the jungle canopy. Dense stuff down there.
That's critical, whether it was enemy fire or mechanical interference. A split-second decision with huge consequences just shows how unbelievably precarious these rescues were.
And you can just hear the desperation Woody Berger gets on the radio. I was 5 feet from the rescue. Why did he leave?
Oh man, heartbreaking. Absolutely devastating.
Yeah. So after that failed attempt, the whole rescue force has to head back, refuel, rearm, change crews, the logistics of it all.
Right. It wasn't just the pilots in the air. It was a huge ground effort, too, keeping those machines running and ready. And every minute they were gone, Berger was still out there.
So while the main force is away, Diller and Huntsman get a new task. Keep the enemy busy. Keep their heads down.
A diversionary tactic.
Exactly. They fly incredibly low, like 100 feet off the deck. Near the Ho Chi Minh Trail, Mia Pass, Diller stresses this area was packed with anti-aircraft guns, 23 mil, 37 mil, small arms everywhere.
Flying that low in that environment,
Yeah.
that's extraordinarily risky. Basically, trolling for fire to protect Berger.
That was the job. Draw attention away from Woody's spot, give him a chance. Their tactic was dropping CBUs, cluster bomb units, but only one at a time, spreading it out.
Trying to suppress specific areas, maybe? Or just keep the enemy guessing?
Could be. Interestingly, Diller says they didn't actually see much ground fire aimed at them. He did later recall seeing one secondary explosion, though.
Huh. Maybe the low altitude and speed worked. Hard to track. But that secondary explosion, reminder, it's still lethal down there.
For sure. They kept this up until word came that the main rescue force was refueled, rearmed, and heading back in. Then Diller and Huntsman headed back to base.
Yeah, handing off the watch.
Right. Now, day three. Diller mentions he and his roommate, Jim George, another pilot, were feeling pretty down about Woody Berger's chances by then. 2 days in that area.
Yeah, the odds felt long, I bet.
But then, 3 a.m. wake-up call, Woody's still alive. He's made contact. Briefing immediately at the command post.
Wow, talk about a shift in mood. That must have energized everyone.
Absolutely. Total renewed focus. The plan for this third attempt was massive. They called it a daisy chain.
Daisy chain.
Yeah, two flights of eight A1 Sky Raiders each. One flight circling on each side of the river where Berger was, constant suppression.
16 Sky Raiders. Just for this one rescue. That's incredible commitment.
Tells you how important it was. They were also planning to use Willie Pete white phosphorus for smoke screens, plus incapacitating gas, non-lethal, just to suppress the enemy during the pickup.
Pulling out all the stops. High-stakes operation.
But then, a snag! Diller's plane has a mechanical problem on startup. He has to taxi back to the ramp.
Oh, frustrating.
Yeah, and when he gets there, another pilot, Captain Dave Freestad, is there too. Similar issue. They both manage to get their planes fixed.
Okay, so they're back in the game.
Sort of. They form up as a two-ship flight, but Major Tom Dayton tells them, hold high, 10,000 feet. Be ready to assist if needed, but stay out of the way for now.
So they become the high cover, the Overwatch. A different perspective.
Exactly. And this is where another detail comes in. Diller had brought his camera that day. Just decided to bring it along.
Oh, interesting.
And the weather. Perfect. Crystal clear. He could see for miles. Gulf of Tonkin in one direction. Mia Pass in the other. Amazing visibility.
So he's got a bird's eye view of everything unfolding.
Pretty much. He watches the rescue helicopter make its final approach, coming in from the south. Guided by Captain Jack Hudson, call sign Sandy.
Sandy. The forward air controller? Coordinating the whole thing on the ground, basically. Critical role.
Absolutely critical. Diller describes hearing Hudson on the radio, giving precise directions to the helicopter pilot. Left 5 degrees, easy forward, guiding him right to Woody Berger.
Like threading a needle under fire. Incredible skill.
And while this is happening, Diller is up there at 10,000 feet taking pictures, documenting the final pickup of Boxer 22 Bravo.
Taking pictures during that. Wow. That takes some presence of mind.
Doesn't it? Then the call comes over the radio, the one everyone's waiting for. Woody's aboard. He's safe.
Ah, fantastic. What a relief.
Huge relief. Diller and Freestad figure the airspace is about to get crowded with everyone heading out, so they peel off and head back to base. And Diller, very humbly, calls his own part in it very modest.
Modest, maybe, in his view. But being there, providing that high cover and those pictures, turns out they weren't so modest in the long run.
Not at all. So Woody Berger gets back. Diller sees him, just a small scratch on his forehead. That's it, after 2 days out there. Incredible.
Just amazing resilience.
And during his debriefing, Woody tells them the evenings were the worst. He'd actually moved position after leaving his parachute, took his radio and survival gear upriver. Good thinking.
Smart move. Didn't stay put.
Yeah, because he watched the enemy come and search his old position where the chute was. They even fired an AK-47 into the bushes and threw a gas canister in there.
Wow. If he hadn't moved. Yeah, that quick thinking definitely saved him.
No doubt. And talk about presence of mind, even after rescue, Woody gives his canteen water to the flight surgeon. Wants it analyzed.
Still thinking tactically, even then. Remarkable.
It is. Diller also mentions the official assessment for the loss of Boxer 22 Alpha Ben Danielson, the pilot who died. They call it a victim of the system.
Victim of the system. That's a chilling phrase. Speaks to the inherent dangers, the complexities, maybe things beyond anyone's immediate control in combat.
Yeah, sobering assessment. Now, here's where the story takes another turn, long after the rescue itself.
Okay.
Remember those photos Diller took from 10,000 feet?
Yeah, the ones he took during the pickup.
Well, the person who actually uploaded the YouTube video of Diller's talk points out something incredible. They say Diller's contribution wasn't modest at all because one of those photos, it provided the first concrete location information for Boxer 22 Alpha for Ben Danielson 38 years after he was killed.
38 years from that photo. Wow. That's unbelievable, the unforeseen impact.
Exactly. A picture taken in the moment becomes this crucial piece of evidence decades later, helping bring closure.
Just goes to show, you never know the ripple effects of your actions.
Yeah.
Especially documenting things like that.
It really does. And this kind of thing, connecting with the past, seems important to Diller. He talks about volunteering at the movable Vietnam Wall back in 2000, and he bumps into the brother of Jim Herrick. Herrick was an A-1 pilot Diller had flown with literally the day before Herrick was shot down and killed.
Oh, wow. A chance encounter like that.
Yeah. And Diller was able to share his memories of Jim, share pictures he had, just giving the family that personal connection, you know?
That's invaluable. Official reports are one thing, but personal stories, photos, they offer a different kind of comfort, maybe a bit of closure.
He did something similar for the family of Rick Chans, another pilot in his squadron who was lost. Diller remembers talking to Chans the night before his last mission, Chance was excited, heading off for R&R in Hawaii soon.
Oh, the anticipation.
And then the next night, the news comes. Chan's shot down. Just that stark contrast. Hope one minute, gone the next.
Yeah, that really hits home. The human cost.
Diller actually went out of his way to find Rick Chan's family back in St. Louis. Met his sister, Toby. He ended up being involved when Chan's remains were eventually identified. Went to the memorial service at the Air Force Academy.
He really took on a responsibility there.
He did, and he shared this quote from a letter Chan's mother wrote. A piece of paper is not much of an exchange for a son.
Oof. Yeah. That says it all, doesn't it? The immense weight of that loss.
Puts it right into perspective. Diller really felt this duty, you know, to share what he knew. Because families often got so little information. First-hand accounts, his photos, slides. They meant the world to these families.
Absolutely. He saw the relief it could bring. Like with Rick Chan's sister when his remains were finally ID'd. Or the reaction mentioned in the video, the grandmother seeing the casket and flag. It's about connection, understanding.
He even wrote a book, Firefly, a Sky Raider story about America's secret war over Laos. He saw that as another way to help, giving context to the missions these guys flew.
That's a significant contribution, creating a lasting record for those families and for history.
Reflecting on his own service, Diller says, you know, he misses the flying, the camaraderie, the action even, but not the hardships, understandably.
Sure. A common sentiment, I think.
He looks back on it positively overall, though, a major part of his life, especially his early days flying the F-106 fighter jet. He loved that plane.
The Delta Dart. A very different beast from the Sky Raider.
Totally different. He explains that Air Defense Command pilots, like him, got pulled into flying A-1s because the Air Force just needed fighter pilots in Vietnam, whatever they could get.
Adaptability was key.
Yeah.
He might have preferred the 106, but the A-1 mission opened up this whole other world of experience for him.
It really did. And he stresses, as an instructor, safety was always paramount. He also really encourages other veterans, you know, write your stories down, document them.
Good advice.
Yeah.
So important to capture those experiences before they're lost. His own story shows why.
Definitely. And just one last, almost unbelievable detail about Rick Chan's, the pilot Diller knew.
Yeah.
His remains. They were eventually identified as part of a set of like 4 bags of remains that were bought by a tourist in Camran Bay, which is like 300 miles from Mia Pass where he went down.
Bought by a tourist. Good grief. How does that even happen?
Right. It's just a bizarre, chaotic postscript to the war. But eventually, through DNA, they confirmed it was him.
Wow. The long, strange journey home for some shows the power of science in resolving these cases, too, even after all that time and distance.
It really does. So stepping back from Captain Diller's whole account of Episode 67, what are the big takeaways for you?
Well, certainly the incredible danger of these rescue missions, the sheer bravery and dedication of everyone involved, from the downed airmen to the rescuers to the support crews.
Yeah, the teamwork.
Definitely. And the profound, lasting impact of loss on the families. That comes through so strongly. But also, maybe surprisingly, the power of individual stories and even small actions like taking a photograph.
Right. How they can echo decades later and bring unexpected closure or understanding. It really validates his point about sharing these stories.
It absolutely does. It's a reminder that history isn't just dates and battles. It's made up of these individual human experiences, the grief, the courage, the connections.
Well said. And maybe for you listening, this deep dive sparks some thoughts about all the other stories out there, the ones not yet told, or the long shadows these events cast on families and communities.
Yeah, perhaps it encourages seeking out more perspectives, digging a little deeper into historical events like this one.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Captain Diller's remarkable story.